Coming up on the Shelley Irwin Show podcast today, the executive director of the World Affairs Council of Western Michigan is retiring. We talk to him. Jillian Lane shares her book, Henry Tudor Must Die. We also talk about the book, Spinning at the Edges. Circle Theater presents Newsies this Thursday. We get a preview. And Kalamazoo's Vine Neighborhood Association is hosting the Comic Book Christmas in July event. We get the details on that as well.
He retires from service. Executive Director of the World Affairs Council of Western Michigan, catching up with you, Michael Van Denden, sharing your 9 years of experience in expanding the council into one of West Michigan's leading forums for international affairs and global education. What are we going to do without you? I think we know. Michael's in the studio. Good morning to you.
Hi, Shelley. How are you? As always, it's a delight to be with you. Thank you for what you do to keep our community connected. You are a treasure. We appreciate you.
Okay, well, this is not about me, but that's okay. Hashtag more to do, because the word will still continue to get out about your World Affairs Council.
Yeah.
And yet we need to take a breath and say thank you to you. And let me ask that question. How do you feel? I know you're in comfortable clothes today.
I'm in comfortable clothes today. I can be, because I retired from my 9 years at the World Affairs Council of Western Michigan on June 30, just getting used to the idea. But we have great leadership. Erica Kubik, who was a longtime director of programming at the council, she will be the executive director. And Emily Smith, who was connected to the council earlier years when I first got to the council, and she spent time at the Chamber, Corwell Health. She's involved in the Sister Cities program of Grand Rapids. She is going to replace Erica's position as director of programming. So Erica and Emily will be a dynamic duo taking the World Affairs Council of Western Michigan forward. And I know we will keep bringing great programming. You know, the World Affairs Council exists to empower the people and organizations of West Michigan to engage thoughtfully with the world. And boy, don't we need that now.
Yes.
And boy, with the World Cup going on, you can see the excitement around the world and how people care.
Yes.
Yeah, and how people care about their countries. Mm-hmm. And how important it is for us to be interested in their countries, too, and what they do. I'm glad we're giving folks a lot of good hospitality here at the World Cup these last few weeks, and I hope we continue to do that. So being world aware is a good thing, Shelley.
Yes. And again, twill continue. What's been a highlight? What's been a low light, if we have to go there?
Highlight are all of the amazing people that we've drawn to West Michigan, you know, ambassadors, brigadier generals, council generals of other countries, amazing experts. We just had General H.R. McMaster was just here in Grand Rapids. That was our last program talking about global issues. And we're a nonpartisan organization. We really, really, really strive to just bring people who know what they're talking about. The other thing that's been a high is our collaborations in our community. We think this is how you normally do things, but I hear from people who are our guests all the time that we have something unique here in West Michigan. So our partnerships with GVSU and WGVU are awesome. A really highlight has been our new partnership with the Gerald R. Ford Presidential Museum and Foundation. And they've been so kind and generous to us, and they've made our Great Decisions program every February and March a home at the museum. So, again, we think, oh, okay, we know that's Jerry Ford's place and whatever, but people who come here are thrilled, and they go, wow, what a place. And to invite somebody to speak in a presidential museum is always a very big plus. So, in Kent District Library, the Hauenstein Center here at GVSU, all of our colleges and universities, and many corporate partners who do international business, they get it. They get that to know about the world is how you change the world and succeed in the world. So worldmichigan.org is where you can find all the many, many, many things we do during the year. So, yeah, I think the highlight are the people that we bring in, the collaborations. If there is a low light, it's just being a small 501c3. It's always a little engine that could, and it's always a challenge. And we're not alone in that. GVU and all the rest with the cuts by the government to PBS. You know, everybody's, you know, working harder and harder and harder to keep going. And certainly a small 501c3 needs to be thinking about that all the time. So, but again, generous community we have here, and they have helped us do our work for over 75 years now.
Has been. What an anniversary to celebrate.
Yeah.
Michael, what advice do you give for new leadership?
I think new leadership, I would say collaborate, collaborate, collaborate. You'll look for partners that do similar things than you do or tangential things to you do and that work together. I mean, we can't do anything alone. We can't do that as individuals, and we can't do that as organizations. So that's my advice. And I don't have to give advice to Eric and Emily because they know the mission very well. But we'll just keep bringing these very intriguing people into our community and lead us in conversations about global issues. And wow, from General McMaster to Ambassador Nicholas Burns to our council generals who from other countries who do a magnificent job representing their country. Keep bringing these fine folks in, and I know they will.
Yes, and keep bringing in fine folks from NPR to your great lecture series.
Thank you
for all those opportunities for interviews and meet and greets. Michael, don't take those for granted.
Oh, we do. And, you know, in our Great Decision series, that's 8 straight weeks of global conversation at the Ford Museum in February and March. We always make sure we bring an NPR person because we respect the organization. Our journalists are phenomenal. And Emily Fang came last year. She's an expert on China. And oh, my word, did she open our eyes. And
sent her a couple follow-up emails whenever I would hear her, almost like a little fan club. Emily, I just heard you. Oh, and now I know you. I digress. What is in store for Michael Van Denden's next 9 years, at least?
Oh, I don't know. This is, you know, when you've worked your entire life and you stop, that's an amazing moment. And I'm going to be reflecting on that a bit. And I love our community. I'm involved in church and community activities, and I'll keep doing that. I volunteer at the community radio station, WICE. Yes. I play music. I'll be doing that.
When do we get to hear you? I'll give you a plug.
Every other Wednesday from 12 to noon. Oh, 12 to noon. 12 to 3. And then the off week, then Saturdays, 8 to 10, I'll be playing folk rock, blues, jazz, and world music, and it's a fun thing to do. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what God has in store. There's always a new adventure ahead, right, Shelley?
Yes. Hashtag more to do, but there is, and don't stop believing, as they say, right?
A Journey reference. Right. Wow.
Yeah, actually, I saw Journey when they were here in Van Andel, and I'm not even a fan. It was called Come See Journey With Us. Okay.
Very famous song.
Thank you for, again, your service. What do you ask of the community in closing, Michael?
I just ask the community to continue to be world curious. We are an important part of the world, and what happens in the world affects us immediately. I'm sure we don't think about that all day, but during COVID we sure did, but during other things too. So please keep us engaged, keep engaged in the world, keep thinking about the world, be curious about the world. And let's be a positive force for good in our world. And I don't have to, the people in West Michigan get this, I think, and they do a marvelous job from our companies to our colleges to our organizations. But we need to be reminded time to time, and that's what we do at the World Affairs Council. WorldMichigan.org. Please attend events and programs coming up.
See, you go out kind of like you've gone out for the last 9 years here on the radio. All right, let's groove. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Michael Van Denden, for your leadership. See you in the seats.
Best wishes to you.
Let's head up to Traverse City, specifically on the 22nd, where my next guest will be, well, she'll be in the hot seat, the National Writers Series former director, now on stage herself, Jillian Manning Lane, writing Henry Tudor Must Die. Big intro to you. Hi, Jillian.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me on.
I'm glad that you are here and ready to take the stage in our wonderful Traverse City. I'll be up there for the runs this weekend, and looking forward to hearing about what's going to happen in your world on July 22nd. Is it true that you are a former director for the series itself, National Rider Series?
I am, yeah. So this is a truly full circle moment for me, from going from hosting and planning all of those events to being the author on the stage now. I'm so excited to see what it's like on the other side.
Very cool. Before we get into more of you, what is this National Writers Series all about?
So it's this wonderful organization in Traverse City that brings best-selling authors, new authors like me, and all kinds of interesting folks up to Traverse City to talk about books and literature and journalism. And it's been going for over a decade and has really, I think, made our community into a book community. You know, we are people that love to read in Traverse City, and we get to hear from these incredible minds about everything from me, the tutors and witches and fun stuff, to, you know, some of the greatest writers. Anne Patchett was recently up here, and Lucy Foley, who's one of my favorite mystery writers, is coming in the fall. So it's just so cool that these people that may not normally find little, you know, Traverse City on the map come up here and talk to us.
Yeah, well, Traverse City is big, especially this week with your Cherry Festival, but knowing that much is in between and a reason to obviously attend. All right, here we go. You're on stage July 22nd. Tell us about your new book.
Yeah, so it's been so much fun to work on for, 5 years now, but that's how research works, right? So it's called Henry Tudor Must Die, and it imagines what would happen if Anne Boleyn had survived her execution, and perhaps she teamed up with a few of the other wives who thought it wasn't so great that Henry VIII was discarding them along the way, and they went out for revenge. So I've been describing it as Six the Musical meets Inglourious Bastards, Quentin Tarantino's movie. So it's a little bit irreverent, it's a little bit funny, it's got some heart, and it may or may not have a more cathartic end than what those of us who aren't big Henry fans saw actually unravel in history.
Yes, and of course, those who had no clue saw the show, Broadway show Six, and that gives us a little taste. Why your interest? How did you do this, find this interest in a little more of your research?
Yeah, well, when I was a kid, we took a trip to England. It was, I think, the first time I'd been out of the country. And we went to the Tower of London, which is not normally a place you take a 10-year-old kid, but I love that kind of stuff. History, museums, all of it set me there. And I just became fascinated by the story of these women. I didn't really care so much about the guy, the king behind it all, but I was fascinated by these women. And I think it just stuck with me all these years. I always say that the 5-year-old kid in me that was like, you're going to be an author when you grow up, she never shut up, no matter how many times I tried to ignore that voice or do other things. And I've had wonderful jobs related to literature. But she just kept saying, you're going to be an author. And so I'm making good on that for 5-year-old Jillian. But I just, you know, I thought that there was always this rumor around Anne Boleyn that she was a witch. And I was so curious about that. And like, why would they have, after she died, made up these rumors about her to kind of absolve Henry of any guilt of being married to her? And so I thought, what if she really was a witch? What if she had some powers? And what if she used them for good and not evil, as, you know, the 16th century counterparts claimed? So it's just been a fun way to reimagine history, to dive into a time period that, though 500 years ago, still feels kind of a lot like today. So it's been a wild ride, for sure.
Nice. How will July 22nd work?
So I will be on stage that evening at Milliken Auditorium in Traverse City with Beth Milligan, who is the head writer for The Ticker, for anybody that reads their Traverse City news. And we will be chatting for about an hour about the book, about writing, about history, about witches probably a little bit. And then there's a Q&A. And what's great is there's also a virtual element. So you can get a virtual ticket to the event and watch from the comfort of home, especially, you know, if you're down in Grand Rapids and it's a little bit of a drive on a Wednesday night.
That's called major road trip. Are books available after the conversation?
Yes. Yep. And I'll be signing. And the book comes out on July 21st. So it'll be kind of my very first stop after a launch party at Horizon Books. And they're going to be wherever books are sold. So hopefully, you know, at all the great stores in GR. And then, of course, you know, any favorite spot, if you're an audiobook listener, library folks, etc. So everywhere books are, so Henry Tudor will be.
Wonderful. All right. Will there be another book? Will that five-year-old keep talking to you?
Yes, I actually, it was a two-book deal. So there will be a second book next summer that is a sibling rivalry, Elizabeth I versus Mary I. So more fun to come.
And more interviews. There we are. One more time, details for July 22nd, please.
Yes, head to nationalwritersseries.org for tickets. And if you want to learn more about the book, Jillian Lane, LAINE.com.
Very nice. Henry Tudor must die. There you are. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Spinning at the Edges is set between Nazi-occupied Amsterdam in 1941 and the winter of 2000 in Washington, D.C., and a small New England town. Let's catch up with the author of Spinning at the Edges, called A Marvel, talking to you, Elizabeth Polliner. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning.
Glad that you are here. And again, your work is Spinning at the Edges, called A Marvel. That's not a bad work to be promoted. This follows Ruth Pearl. Tell me about your storyline.
Sure. Ruth Pearl is the married name of a girl in Amsterdam who is called Rudy Jacobson. That's her original name. And when she was 14 years old, it was 1941, 42, winter of 41, 42. Her sister, Sophia, was 16. And the Nazi occupation had taken hold of Netherlands. And in the course of things, Sophia lost her life and was murdered. And in the wake of that, or immediately on the heels of that, the family flees. And eventually they come to the United States. So Ruth Pearl has long lived. She eventually married, divorced, and lives on a lake in a little town in Connecticut, and takes a tremendous amount of solace in her view of the lake. She's kept everything to herself. She has one daughter who even at 39, doesn't know the full story of what's happened to her mother in the past. And so there's a kind of divide between them because they don't share their pain. The daughter doesn't share her personal pain because she assumes her mother's pain is greater than hers all the time, even though she doesn't know exactly what it is. So a part of the story is this emotional divide between the mother and the daughter, just a kind of silence that causes the daughter to feel tremendous loneliness. And the action, in a sense, the action in the 2000 part of the story kicks off when a neighbor starts to build a renovation to his house on the lake, and it's going to block the mother's view, and she is really, really upset because she counts on that view for comfort, great comfort.
Is this based on any real situation, or you literally just take us on a story?
It's a story. I imagined it.
Nice. Tell me a little bit more about any themes that you'd like us to share. I mean, this moves seamlessly between America 2000, of course, marked by a controversial presidential election, and the Netherlands in 1941. What was that like to write?
Well, it was consuming to write. It took a lot of research, particularly with the more historical part. They're both historical, but the more historical part took a lot of research. It was very moving to write. The book's themes include inherited trauma. I think that's what I was just talking about. The mother really never resolved her grief and contains all her pain, and the daughter suffers because of that. And there's, you know, that's some of how the trauma is inherited in that generation. There's a third generation. There's the mother of Sophia and Rudy, who suffers too. So in some ways, the trauma is three generations of trauma, and that family is depicted in the novel. Another theme in the novel is survival. What does it mean to be a survivor? Not just of the Holocaust, but there's other characters who survive other things, such as there's a judge who helps to save the life of a teenage boy. Also, Ruth Pearl helps to save the life of a teenage boy. I forgot to mention that. That's a big part of the action. And when that happens, the three of them, the boy, 16-year-old boy, Ruth Pearl, who's 72 at the time, and the judge, come into community with each other. So a big movement in the story for all the characters is moving away from isolation and containing their pain internally and sharing it with each other and healing. It's ultimately a healing story once they connect with each other. And the first connection, and this is in the 2000 period of the story, is the Holocaust survivor, Ruth Curl, the teenage boy named Ian, and the judge named Arthur Cantrell. And all of them are suffering in one way or another. Only Ruth Curl is suffering from the Holocaust, but the judge is suffering because he had a domestic violence in his home that he's never really recovered from, too, and that haunts him and his relationships. So there's different kinds of trauma that the different characters hold, but it really helps them to find community with each other and open up, even a little bit, open up with each other. And it's the boy who saved Ian who begins to open up to Ruth, which allows her to open up not only to herself really first, but to her daughter ultimately. Finally, at the end of the book, she's ready to tell her daughter the story of her past. Although by the end of the book, the reader knows it because it's, as you said, it's interwoven throughout the whole novel.
Elizabeth Poliner with us talking about her latest Spinning at the Edges Award winner and, of course, a finalist, I like this, for the Library of Virginia's People's Choice Award in Fiction and more. Lastly, talk about the title, Spinning at the Edges.
Oh, that's a great question. Spinning at the Edges, I think, is a good title for this novel. I think it really fits, and I love titles that fit the books like a glove, and I think my last novel, As Close to Us as Breathing, fit that book like a glove. So the way Spinning at the Edges fits this book, there's lots of edges in the novel, first of all. There's literal edges, like the edges of skates. There's a lot of ice skating in the novel in all the locations, in Amsterdam, in Washington, D.C., and in on the lake in the little town of Connecticut. So there's the edges of skates. But there are metaphorical edges, like the edges of love, the love between the mother and the daughter that I was just talking about. It has its own edges of silence, you might say. And then there's, I like to think there's edges of two government systems that are juxtaposed in this novel. There's the edges of fascism and democracy. And so I play with edges in lots of different ways throughout the novel, and the word is sprinkled throughout the novel. Spinning is a big word in the novel, too. And the way I think of that is there's, again, literal spinning. People spin on ice skates. The girls at the beginning, the two sisters, are trying to practice what they call the impossible one-foot spin. But then there's spinning out of control. Going round and round is kind of a theme, another theme in the novel, and I think that's a theme of being a little bit stuck. Like Stephanie, the daughter, goes round and round with her problems. She's a little bit stuck. But then there's spinning, which is going round and round very, very fast. And that's when things get a little out of control. And literally, the characters sometimes spin. Sophia, the older daughter, who's going to, in some ways, throw away her life. She's murdered, but she's reckless, too. And she's spinning out of control. But then there are governments spinning out of control, too, such as the Nazi regime, the fascism of the 1940s is spinning. You can think of it that way, spinning out of control. So I think the word is also sprinkled throughout the book, spinning and spin. There's different kinds going on, but I think that's the way the title works. There's a certain amount of anxiety in the book, and it captures that.
Elizabeth, how do we find out more about your work, Spinning at the Edges?
You can find more about it, thank you for asking, on my website, elizabethpoliner.com. You can go to booksellers. There's Amazon, of course, is selling it, and they have some writing about it, too.
Wonderful.
But probably my website is the best page, or Harper, my publisher. Harper is an imprint of HarperCollins.
Nice. Elizabeth Poliner, P-O-L-I-N-E-R, again, Spinning at the Edges. Thanks for your time. Newsies. It's all about opening week, opening night. There is that tech week, and there are actors in studio. Glad that you are here, Bethany Love, Finch, and a Newsie you play?
Yes.
Thank you for you. Owen Smith, Oscar Delancey, Newsie, Ensemble, Fight Captain. You're getting a big paycheck.
Oh, you know it.
Hashtag you are volunteers. There we are. Newsies open on behalf of Circle Theater. Of course, for 74 years and counting, Circle Theater has enriched, entertained, and educated our community. We'll get all about that in just a second. How is it feeling, Owen Smith? Tell me about this, Newsies.
Yeah, it's awesome. Newsies is about the 1899 Newsboy strike. It's about a true story. And then Disney made a phenomenal musical about it. And we're dancing, we're singing, and it's a great time.
Bethany, your side of the story?
I think it's just an amazing experience just to bring this huge community of Newsies together, far and wide, different ages, different backgrounds, and just making a change for a lot of kids.
Yes. All right. So I'll go back to you, if I may, Owen. Do you have kind of like the Newsy hat on?
I do have the Newsy hat on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very important to represent.
Yeah. And ultimately get into your character. Tell me about how you are playing a variety of roles here.
I do play a variety of roles. I wear a lot of different Newsy hats, so to say. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I get to play kind of both sides of, you know, Newsy, and then I get to play Oscar Delancey, who's kind of an enemy of the Newsies. So I'm kind of a switch hitter. And yeah, it's great for storytelling, great for character work, and also the fight captains, because there's a lot of, it's very physical in the show. There's a lot of lifts in the show. And also shout out to Luke, our dance captain.
Nice. Bethany, do you get lifted or do you lift?
I lift. I don't get lifted, but I do have the great opportunity to fight Oscar Delancey, so it's great.
We won't ask who wins. There we are. Bethany, more on your character as Finch and a Newsy.
Finch is someone that just speaks their mind, but also like makes everyone realize what needs to happen and what things can happen in the moment. So while Jack is giving the moments and sharing like, hey, we need to have the strike, it's, hey, you do realize the cops are beating up striking trolley workers, or what if we don't show up for work, what will happen? But just making sure, like, let's keep our head on our shoulders and not just keep flying away.
Nice. Oh, and give more love to your director and choreography and more. Yep.
Yeah, so Mikey Winslow, Broadway vet. It's so awesome. Did West Side Story, American Idiot. He's done, like, Wicked Tour. Like, he's awesome. So just major props to Mikey bringing this community together, this team together. We are such a diverse, like, from ages and to talents. Mm-hmm. You know, we have people flipping, we have people tapping, we have people lifting. It's so much fun.
Nice. And Bethany, I trust there's nothing like a tech week where it's costume time, you have invited audiences and more.
Oh, absolutely. Tech Week is honestly one of my favorite moments, just to see everything get pulled together. Jess is an amazing costume designer, and she has pulled out so many different styles and personalities of every single cast member, just so that they feel confident and comfortable, and then you get to see that with tech and lighting.
Yes, and this is a musical.
This is a musical.
Yeah. Any speaking in between?
Absolutely.
Yes. So, what is that like, Owen, to go back, to go in to sing, and then use your voice in general speak?
Oh, it's a lot of fun because we get to speak in New York dialects. So we have a lot of fun with that, and I'm making my Jersey mother proud.
There you are. Did you bring in a dialect coach?
Did we? I don't think we did. We didn't. But I would always check in with my mom to make sure I'm speaking correctly.
Yes. Bethany, tell me a little bit about, I like to go some of the behind the scenes. What was an audition like for this type of show?
So at Circle Theater, it's a very different way that auditions happen, because all of the production teams for all the shows for that season will be in the same space that you are in. Your one song is your moment just to bring everything that you have, and just for the production team to see what you can offer, and you can tell them what shows you're interested in. So for Newsies, I just said, hey, I'm Bethany, I'm here to audition for Newsies and other shows, and just sang my song. But the dancing was where you pretty much just show your personality with the choreography.
Yes. And what song did you sing?
Waving Through a Window from Dear Evan Hansen.
Oh, how about your, Owen, your audition process?
Well, I was actually in another show in a different part of the state, so I had to send in a video. So I sent, with me singing, dancing, and tapping, and yeah, it was a lot of fun.
And, Owen, there's nothing like getting the call or the email or...
Oh, yeah, it's great.
The positive side.
Oh, it was... I'm making my six-year-old self proud because my older sister actually introduced me to Newsies, and so that was like a movie we would watch over and over. And so I'm actually, I don't know if she knows this, but I'm dedicating the performance to her. So hopefully she comes sees it in the bio.
Hope so. Bethany, the run in general, again, Tech Week, but you have your formal opening on Thursday night?
Correct. Thursday is our opening night at 7:30.
What's that like?
Opening night? It is a whirlwind of a lot of energy. I'm super excited about opening night just because all the jitters come out and then you just get to show what you've been working on for the past 8 weeks.
And I always ask this question, Owen, how do you keep it fresh?
Oh, man, the working out before the show, for sure. And also, each of the Newsies, we've created like different relationships with them, so that keeps it really fresh behind the scenes and stuff.
Yes. Newsies, again, opening, extra, Newsies takes the stage this July. You must have a good marketer. At Circle Theater, of course, that would be your Aquinas College Performing Arts Center. Tell me about the run in general. You open Thursday and go a couple
weekends?
Yeah,
we go 3 weeks. Yep. Also, shout out Shannon, our marketing person.
You know, Shannon, Michaela, and the whole team, Lynn, and what a good group. And I guess, this is a Tony Award-winning score as well,
yeah.
Right?
Yep, won best choreography, best score. It's Alan Menken, Disney legend.
Yeah, that's cool. What's the final show usually like? I'll stay with you, Owen.
Oh, man, so bittersweet. I think there's going to be a lot of tears, especially with the youngins, but we're just so grateful to share this with our community. Hope they come out and support. It's going to be such a blast.
It's not to rush to the end, but how do closing nights usually happen?
Closing night for us will end on July 25th. It will be bittersweet. It will be a one-of-a-kind last show. Everyone's going to put everything out there, leave it on the floor, and just feel excited and refreshed afterwards.
Bethany, you are playing, of course, many Bethany Love, along with Owen Smith. Bethany, why come see the show in closing?
You should come see the show in closing because everyone has become their Newsie. Their Newsie is them. What you see on stage is what we've been doing. But it also just showcases everyone's talents and gifts that they have just grown in the past 8 weeks or even before that, and just taking a step on their own out of their comfort zone just to show what they're capable of doing.
Owen Smith, as actor and, of course, fight captain, there are no jaws broken in this one, right?
not this time.
So hopefully not, but it's just this community, if you want to support your local theater, but for Newsies, people come out of the woodwork. Like, it is the talent that comes in. It's so exciting, and don't want to miss it.
Cool. All right, how do I get my tickets, please?
You can look online at circletheater.org and purchase your tickets there.
All right, break a leg, enjoy the run. When it comes to Newsies opening this Thursday night at Aquinas College of Performing Arts, thank you for you and all that good stuff for your talents to you both. Again, Aquinas College Performing Arts Center. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
An initiative in your Vine neighborhood. The association is lucky to have you, Devin Yider. Good that you are here. Kalamazoo, you are described as a handsome Dev. Is it Dev Ill?
Yes.
Live painter, comic book creator, professional illustrator, community organizer. We had a great time putting the spotlight of you on our Kalamazoo Lively Arts, which will be in the fall, so stand by for that. But another hat that you wear. Thanks for being here, Devin.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you. When did you start drawing cartoons?
I started drawing cartoons almost 5 years ago in October 2021, thanks to the inspiration of cartoonist Kayfabe.
So not as a little kid?
I doodled a little bit here and there, but I explored other venues. I was a live musician for a while, ran my own shows, etc. Until 2021, after I discovered cartoonist kayfabe.
Yes. What are you saying, cartoonist?
Cartoonist kayfabe.
Okay, expand, please.
So, cartoonist kayfabe is a YouTube channel created by Jim Rugg and Ed Piskor.
Okay, it's right in front of me. Cartoonist kayfabe, Ed Piskor. And you took cartoonists by the storm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Certainly did.
Here we are talking about a wonderful initiative, but you also describe yourself as a community organizer. Tell me about this. Yes.
Yeah. So the comic books that I've been making for the last, I think we're going on 2.5 years now, they've all been group efforts. So I helped create Defective Comics. I was one of the first artists to work on Saturday Morning Mashup and with Handplant Press and Power to the Panel. So these were all books that we made as a group. It takes quite a while to make a comic on your own, but when you're collaborating with other people, right, we're all sharing a couple pages here and there, and then we're able to make a full book. From there, I took my experience from working with other people creating these books and then brought them to my neighborhood association in the Vine neighborhood. And so since January, I've been putting on events every month. We were doing bi-weekly. Now we're down to once a month events. I created the Vine Street Vintage Market. There's so many amazing artists in Vine neighborhood. You can throw a rock anywhere and hit one, right? And so we put on these events where you let artists showcase their talents, whether that's through music or art or clothes vendors, giving them the opportunity to be able to share their work at least once a month in the Vine neighborhood.
All right, I'll continue 5th grade questions. Where is the Vine neighborhood located?
So Vine neighborhood is in Kalamazoo, Michigan. It's right outside of campus. It's where a lot of the students live, right? So there's so much influence of young artists and talented young people in Kalamazoo. The Vine Neighborhood Association building itself is located at 806 Southwest Nidge, so pretty much on the corner of Southwest Nidge and Vine Street, right next door to Satellite Records.
So let's get into Comic Book Christmas July in the Vine neighborhood.
Yes.
What is it?
So Comic Book Christmas in July is a community initiative, an annual initiative to collect comic books for the month of July, and then on the last Saturday of July, donate those comic books to your local lending libraries.
Will there be a thing going on in your neighborhood that day?
Yes. So on July 25th, we'll be meeting at the Vine Neighborhood Association, the VNA, at 10 a.m. To gather the comics that we've collected for the month of July, which we have quite a few already, thanks to donations and sponsorship from the Vine Neighborhood. And then we will disperse those throughout the Vine.
Yes, and dispersing to?
To the local lending libraries.
Yes, that's what you mentioned, which are wonderful opportunities. And, of course, why are we calling this Comic Book Christmas July?
So this was started by Ed Piskor and Jim Rugg from Cartoonist Kayfabe. They started this initiative 3 years ago to encourage people to try and bridge that gap between comics and the public. Comic books used to be so much more accessible. Used to be at drugstores and your supermarkets, right, when you were about to check out. Nowadays, they're kind of confined to the comic book store. So it was their goal to use this as a way to try and bridge that gap between the public and comic books, as well as to encourage literacy. So I started doing this myself in the Vine 3 years ago when the program began. But now, thanks to the support of my community, we've got some sponsorships, been collecting donations. People are so excited for this initiative.
And again, more about you as I listen and now understand. Over the last 2 years, you, Devin, you've published 114 pages, across 30 titles.
Uh-huh.
And you were awarded the King Kayfaber Championship Belt.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, I'm very proud of that. It was the inspiration of Ed Piskor and Jim Rugg, their enthusiasm that and the community that they built comic books that encouraged me to get back into the medium. And so, unfortunately, Ed Piskor passed away a couple years ago. So in his memory, his family put on the Ed Piskor Comic-Con in Pittsburgh. And this last year for the second annual event, they had a competition for the best cartoonist, and I won.
So describe your cartoon. Are they stories? Is it give me the 101s.
Yeah, so I specialize in comic book narrative storytelling, right? So sequential art. So yes, they're all narrative-driven art pieces. I've had a series going through Saturday Morning Mashup and Handplant Press that we've been publishing for the last year and a half called La Escuela de Lucha, which is the School Lucha Libre, and it's sort of a telling of the history of Lucha Libre through comic books. I've also got a story called The War on Woodward and Fifth, or WW5, that we've been publishing every month through our monthly series called Power Metal, which you can read online for free at powermetal.com. So those are the main titles, and then I've done several other short stories throughout books published by Defective Comics, Handplant Press, and Power Metal, or Power to the Panel.
Devin, are you self-taught?
I guess self-taught is kind of hard to say because you're still learning from other people. So I've spent a lot of time in the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts. They have an amazing scholarship program that I can't recommend enough. So I've got a lot of my formative teaching there.
You also are described as a live painter. How would you describe that?
So every time that I table, every time I table.
Wait, that you table?
Table, yes. So I vend frequently. I'll set up a table at marketplaces or other events, right, to sell my comics. But every time I do live drawing and live cartooning. So, yeah.
Which is kind of like theater in itself. And then,
sure.
And then does that come to fruition where that is actually sold at that venue? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yep, it sure can be. Yep.
Yes. What? Tell me more about, again, talking with you, Devin Yeider, about the Vine Art, the Vine neighborhood, the Association Strong. What else happens there in addition to, like, what happens on the 25th?
Oh, we throw on so many events at the Vine Neighborhood Association. It's really a great place for, you know, in the Vine, you can just open a door and encourage people to come in and tell them they have a safe space to share their art. And
so there is a building.
Yes.
That I'm going to.
Yep. 806 nice. South Westridge. Yep. Yep, and it's also a space for community resources. So if you're living in the Vine neighborhood and you're looking for community access, go to 806 South Westridge, V&A.
Yes, and I guess what still is in the hopper for you, Devin, as far as dreams and big comic books? Do you do the comic cons and more?
Yes, certainly. So right now we're finishing up La Escuela de Lucha. We've got the art finished. We're just putting the final touches on the edit, and then we're going to be launching our first Kickstarter. And I say our. This is me and Raphael Curley, a.k.a. Dick Kerbo. This is our project that we've been working on with assistance from my mentor, Brian Moss. And so we'll be launching our first Kickstarter here shortly. And then WW5, we've been publishing that for the last 6 months, 8 pages at a time. And we're wrapping up the color work to collect all those pages and publish our first issue. So we've got two new comics that will be coming up in the next few months. That's on the horizon for me.
I'm thinking your mind never stops.
It doesn't. Which is funny because I'm a yoga instructor too. So that's part of the practice.
Yeah, that does bring back that balance if that's needed. But mm-hmm. And of course, that's a compliment, Devin, that you're chasing life, as I often say. How important in your field, got a couple of minutes left, to have a mentor, to surround yourself with other cartoonists? Obviously, it doesn't seem to be a competition thing.
No, I can't recommend it enough. I mean, we need each other. We're social creatures. We need each other. And you are the sum of the five people you surround yourself with. So if you're trying to get anywhere in the field, if you're trying to improve in a particular space, seek mentorship. Seek people that are smarter than you or better than you in this field and try and surround yourself with those people so you can learn and grow.
So back to the Vine Neighborhood Association event that we're talking, the Comic Book Christmas July in the Vine Neighborhood. Where do I find out more information about this?
So you can find out more information by checking out the Vine Neighborhood Association's Instagram or following me on Instagram, dev_ill_art.
Why ill?
The Damn Handsome Devil was my live performing name when I was a musician. So we just changed it up a little bit as the now self-proclaimed cartoonist.
Yes. And does your cartoon, do you have a character?
I've got this little ghoul that I use for a lot of promotion, for ads, for the Vine Neighborhood Association, local events in the Vine. So, yeah.
Look for the little ghoul.
That's right. Okay.
All right. You're living a dream. Keep on doodling. I trust if one is interested in comicking, get out there and just do it.
That's right. And connect with people.
Yeah. All right. Call Devin. Be careful what you wish for. All right, Devin, spend some time in Grand Rapids and then get yourself back to your planning. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much.
Your inspiration for the day, according to Marcel Proust, let us be grateful to the people who make us happy. They are the charming gardeners who make our souls blossom. So water the garden. There you are. I'm Shelley Irwin. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks, Joe, for your behind-the-scenes work. Talk tomorrow.